Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The Practical Value of Emotional Safety in the Workplace. Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter, and you are joining us today, Friday, July 3rd, 2026, for our management article for the month of July. This is a two-day article, and it is called Trauma-Informed Leadership. Trauma-Informed Leadership. We will be talking about this article today as well as tomorrow, so we invite you to join us for both days. We'll go through the ideas of the article, but even more, we'll go through the vocabulary in the article and help you to get a chance to practice your English, hear it spoken. And when I say we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelists joining us for both days. Please welcome Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everyone. It's great to be on Advanced once more.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us, Rebecca, for this one. We have a somewhat more serious topic than our articles tend to look at today, and this is about, it's right there in the headline, trauma. What do we mean by trauma, Rebecca?
Well, when you talk about trauma, we are talking about deep emotional suffering.
Yeah.
So it's deep emotions, and it's usually negative emotions. You feel angry, you feel sad, you feel frustrated, you feel disappointed. I mean, these are the kind of emotions we talk about when we talk about trauma. And it's
right.
Usually based on a bad experience.
Right.
So
right.
Maybe you had a bad experience in dating. Maybe you had a bad experience in your childhood. Maybe you had a bad experience at work, because we'll be talking about work trauma today.
Right, right. Good point. And yeah, trauma is, it's something bad. I mean, you know, in a sense, we've all had something bad happen to us at some point in our lives, but we haven't all had trauma. Trauma is exceptionally, unusually bad. Like, we've had bad things happen, but not all of us have been, for example, abused by a parent. Not all of us have seen their parents divorce when they were still children. These are unusually bad things that carry over into our adult lives. So trauma-informed leadership is a specific category here of leadership, a particular quality in leadership. And the deck further explains it a bit there. Why emotional safety is a measurable business advantage. So we're not just talking about emotions here and thinking about emotions and kind of coddling emotions. We're talking about a business advantage that you get when you pay attention as a manager in your business to the emotional life of your employees. Rebecca, have you ever worked in a place, and we're not looking for names and places here, obviously, mm-hmm. details or anything, but have you ever worked in a place that was emotionally unsafe?
That's a really good question, Peter. I think we are very blessed to work here at Studio Classroom, where it is a very emotionally safe place.
Yes.
So it's a very warm environment where most of our colleagues are friends, and the bosses are rather understanding on most things. So I think here it's very emotionally safe. But I did work briefly in a place where I felt like I was walking on eggshells under a year. I worked in a place, and my immediate boss was wonderful. She was European. She was a European lady. She was an amazing person. But the whole company culture was just very volatile.
Mm.
Volatile, just like you're never really sure what exactly is going to happen.
Unpredictable.
It's unpredictable. You know. And I wouldn't say I felt unsafe, but I would say I felt very cautious.
Mm-hmm.
I would be very cautious and not express everything I wanted to express,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. I don't know how it would be taken mm-hmm. at this particular company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, I felt like I was walking on eggshells.
Right, walking on eggshells.
And this idiom just means that you just really don't know what's going to happen, so you're very, very careful.
Right.
Because you're afraid, like when you walk on eggshells, you're afraid that the egg will break.
Right, because eggshells are very fragile, easy to break. And so if you have to walk on them in whatever situation, you would walk very carefully, extremely carefully.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I also, thank you for sharing, Rebecca. I myself have worked in a place that was emotionally unsafe. Not ORTV, I'm very happy to say. But some years ago, yeah, I worked in a place back in the States in which my manager was an intelligent guy, even had a sense of humor, very driven, but was not good with anger and was not, didn't mind expressing his anger so that the whole office heard. There was, had no sense of privacy when I messed up in some way. He would raise his voice. He would talk to me for like half an hour, just going over and over the same ground, basically. And I did eventually leave that job after some years. I probably stayed
after
on.
After some years?
After some years.
How long did it take you to just leave?
I was young. It took me about a year to actually come to the decision to leave. There were other complicating issues at the time. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to get a new job as easily.
Yes.
And there was also just, you know, if I'm honest, there was pride in it. I was like, come on, I'm not going to walk away from this job just because the guy's kind of a jerk.
Right.
You know, I can tough this out. I'm, you know, I'm strong. I'm brave. I can take this, you know, kind of anger and abuse.
What was the final straw?
The final straw
is the thing that pushes you to do that decision you've been delaying.
Right. The final straw was just because I've spoken with him about it numerous times. And the final straw was just I realized that it was not going to change, no matter how well I did at the job. And it was also, see, part of it was also it wasn't a job that I was devoting my life to.
Right.
This is back in my theater days when I was trying to be an actor. This was just a job to pay the bills, to pay the rent, to put food on the table. And so I didn't have my heart invested in it to the degree that I wanted to keep putting up with this abuse just because I believed in the work. I didn't believe in the work. I believed in the paycheck. Mm. And so eventually, you know, my pride got worn down and I was just like, okay, forget it. You win. This is, I can't come into work every day with a knot in my stomach.
That's right. That's right.
And I did finally leave. But yeah, that was, for me at least, I wouldn't say the whole company, but for me and the people around me who were in the vicinity of my manager, it was an emotionally unsafe place because they could see from my own example that if you messed up, the whole office would know about it. Mm. And so we will read in our article today the benefit of creating emotionally safe environments in your workplace. And the author of the article will lead us through her own personal experience in that area. So let's go into our first reading. We will do two readings today, as I say. This is, again, the management article for July, starting on July 3rd, Trauma-Informed Leadership. And let's go into our first reading now.
Trauma-Informed Leadership. Why emotional safety is a measurable business advantage. A decade ago, I joined a tech company in my first business development role in Singapore. Within the first quarter, I had closed 2 quarters worth of sales targets, but the environment was abusive. The CEO yelled regularly. Personal and sexist remarks were common on body, appearance, even what women ate or wore. It was triggering. Having lived through a previous abusive situation, I found myself in constant flight or freeze mode. Every time I saw an email from my manager, my heart raced. I struggled to breathe in meetings. Despite my outward success, internally I was unraveling. Finally, I quit. That experience changed the course of my career. For the next 10 years, I delved into how trauma shows up in people and organizations and eventually founded a global social enterprise focused on resilience-centered leadership.
All right, so we meet our author right at the beginning of our article here. She had been part of a tech company about a decade ago in Singapore in a business development role. And Rebecca, how did she do at this company?
She actually in terms of her work, she did exceptional. Because here it says within the first quarter. So in 1 year, you have 4 quarters, right?
Yeah.
4 quarters. So that's 1/4 of the year. So that's January, February, March is 1 quarter. And then the next 3 months is the second quarter. Within the first quarter, she had actually achieved 2 quarters worth of her sales target. So the sales targets are the target that if you're in sales, your manager sets, you have to make so much revenue per quarter. So in 1 quarter, she had actually achieved what they wanted for 2 quarters. So in terms of work, she was exceptional.
Yes, she was apparently quite productive. But, big but here, the environment was abusive. We used that word in our introduction, abusive, meaning using cruel words or physical violence, basically using something in an abnormal way. Abusive, the way it's not meant to be used. And in this case, it's people, the way you're not supposed to use them. You're not supposed to make insulting remarks or create an environment in which they feel uncomfortable. And as an example of the abusive environment, she notes that the CEO, the chief executive officer, yelled regularly. And that's basically the experience that I had. My boss was not the CEO of the company, but he was my manager. He was my boss, and he did yell regularly, and not just at me. It wasn't that he had a special thing in for me. He dealt with other people who angered him or disappointed him in that way. But what are some other examples, Rebecca, of this abusive environment the author was in?
This boss sounds quite awful. Here it says, personal and sexist remarks were common. So we talk about personal remarks, it's usually talking about, like, the boss might say, oh, you're lazy, you're stupid, like things like that. They're attacking your character. So those are personal remarks. Sexist is usually in most instances, it's males looking down on women. So males treating us women as basically inferior than males.
Right.
So that's usually sexist. And then in body appearance, even what a woman ate or wore. Oh man, Peter, this is making me think of a current politician.
Yeah. Who shall go unnamed, but
we'll
our listeners
unnamed,
are allowed to use their imaginations.
Yes, it's an American politician who holds the highest position of power in that country.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is the kind of remarks that it's a complete no-no in our day and age.
Right, right. In the United States, it's apparently not a deal breaker if you want to become leader of the free world. But in most environments, yes, the United States politician we're talking about is not a model to follow for business success. Again, the emphasis of this whole article is not some kind of virtuous moral character that we're trying to develop, as important as that is. The author takes a practical, business-minded view of the whole issue throughout the article. So I think it's important to keep coming back to that and remember that. But as the author says, all these, this culture that the CEO created, and we can imagine perhaps that people other than the CEO also made personal and sexist remarks on body appearance, what women ate or wore, because the manager, the leader, sets the tone for the people that he or she leads. And it was triggering, as she writes. It was triggering. It reminded her. It triggered, like you pull the trigger on a gun and it fires the bullet. Well, an emotional trigger is something that someone does to you that stimulates a response in you or reminds you of a similar situation that you were going through, usually a bad situation. And indeed, she goes on to say that having lived through a previous abusive situation, she found herself in constant flight or freeze mode. So this company in Singapore was not the first time she was in an abusive situation. That's why it was triggering for her. But what's this phrase, Rebecca, flight or freeze mode?
Peter, this is such an important phrase to learn, flight or freeze. And that's usually, this is from evolution. It's from biology. So when something happens, there's the 4 Fs. If you look at our specialized terms, we can see fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. This is the 4 Fs. And this is how your body's biology response to stress.
Right.
So when you have a stress, that usually this is like external stress from the environment. Like for example, like maybe I'm just walking along the path and a lion shows up.
Yeah.
And then I will do one of these 4 Fs.
Right.
And then flight, we can see flight just means to run away.
Right. It doesn't mean get on a plane. It just means run.
Yeah. Flight means you run quickly away. Flight. And then we have freeze. freezes, it's like, I don't know what to do. So I just stand there. I'm paralyzed. I don't know what to do.
Right.
So these are two of the four Fs that it's just biology. This is how our body reacts to stress. So she always felt like she was either wanting to run away or she was frozen. She didn't know what to do.
Right. And that doesn't mean she would just stand in the middle of the office, not moving. It means more on an emotional or a mental level, she would not be able to think. She would not be able to process. She would not be able to respond when these triggering events would take place. And she gives examples of those triggering events. When she saw an email from her manager, her heart raced, meaning it beat much more faster because of the nervousness. She struggled to breathe in meetings, simply take breath in and out. Despite her outward success, internally, inside, she was unraveling. Unraveling, meaning to come apart. Something that is joined together that starts to unravel, is it comes apart.
It's kind of like a knit sweater, right? Like sometimes
I think it is originally. Like
I think it's a knitting term. It's like perhaps you have a sweater and maybe at the edge you have a hole, and then the threads just start to unravel.
Right,
you know, like so you like if you have a. If a sweater, make sure there's no holes that can unravel.
Exactly. Yeah, so or a loose thread.
If you just
pull it and the whole thing starts
unravels.
To unravel. Yeah. And so finally she quit. She just left. And that's, you know, that's the loss of that business because, again, she had closed two quarters worth of sales targets in one quarter. So that was a loss for the business. And she goes on to say that for her, it changed the course of her career. For the next 10 years, Rebecca, she did what?
She delved. Okay, this is a very good verb. To delve just means to, you go deep into something. You learn about it. You find out more information about something. And that's called delved. She delved into how trauma shows up in people in organizations. So she really studied this. She went to study how does trauma show up for people when they're out in the workplace.
Right. And she went on to, as a result of her studies, she went on to found a global social enterprise focused on resilience-centered leadership. A social enterprise is basically a business whose main goal is not just to make money, but to serve a useful social purpose in some way. So the business, a social enterprise will make money, but not just for the sake of making money. It will make money in order to, for example, create jobs for marginalized groups, for people who have a tough time getting a job, like a coffee shop that hires homeless people, for example. That would be an example of a social enterprise. They may not make a lot of money, but making money is not the point of the organization. And her social enterprise, as it says, was focused on resilience-centered leadership.
Peter, what is resilience-centered leadership,
you
think?
It's a good term. Resilience, meaning your ability to bounce back from something, to take a hit in some way, to have a bad experience, but then take a breath, get up, dust yourself off, and be able to keep going afterwards instead of just laying down and being utterly defeated by it. Resilience. And so her social enterprise is, this article is a result of that. It comes out of that because this article is about how to create leadership in which people can be resilient and bounce back and not always be defined and controlled by trauma in their past. So let's go on now to our second reading, and we'll read more about the way trauma is dealt with in work environments currently, get a sense of what things are like right now. So let's go into our second reading now.
More than performance management. While HR manuals continue to discuss things like performance management, what's often missed is the fact that people will escape environments where emotional strain is ignored or misunderstood. At the center of this gap is something we rarely train for: trauma literacy. Trauma literacy is the ability, one, to recognize that unhealed past experiences show up in daily behavior, and two, to respond in ways that foster safety and resilience. You don't need to know someone's history to be mindful of trauma's effects. You just need to assume that trauma exists and that it may be shaping how people show up at work. managers often misinterpret the signs. Silence gets labeled as disinterest. Anxiety looks like incompetence. Overfunctioning is praised until collapse. In reality, these are often trauma responses: fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. The business cost of trauma. Most workers are taught to push harder instead of pausing to hold space for emotions. Emotions are messy, and it often feels safer to stick with technical tasks and leave feelings unaddressed. But a Harvard Business Review study found that employees who feel psychologically safe show a 76% increase in engagement, a 50% increase in retention, and a 67% increase in referrals. Trauma literacy is not extra. It's essential.
Okay, so we're talking here at the beginning of our section about HR manuals. I think we all know that, HR, human resources. HR manuals continue to discuss things like performance management. According to the author, they miss an important fact. And what is that fact, Rebecca?
Well, they miss the fact that maybe people want to escape their environment if they're under emotional strain. So strain just means if something is strained, it's like you're under a lot of heavy pressure. So if you're under emotional strain and people don't understand your emotional strain, maybe people will quit and leave because they can't continue to be in this environment where they feel triggered all the time.
Right, right. And that was the case with me at my job. It wasn't that my boss was triggering some trauma in my background, but it was that he seemed not to understand or to ignore the fact that his behavior was putting me under emotional strain. And I tried to explain that to him several times, but just nothing seemed to change. He would sort of acknowledge my point on an intellectual level, but then a week later, he would be behaving in the same way. And yes, eventually I did escape that environment. And this is what the author mentions, this to note that at the center of this gap in understanding is something that we rarely train for: trauma literacy. Interesting use of the word literacy there. Normally it means the ability to read in a culture. Are you literate? But here, and it means roughly the same thing here, more of a figurative use. Are you able to read? Are you able to understand trauma? To be literate in trauma, trauma literacy. And she goes on in the next paragraph then to explain what she means more by trauma literacy. Rebecca, what is she talking about?
So here we see in the next paragraph, trauma literacy is one. Recognize that unhealed past experiences show up in daily behavior. So first we have to recognize that a person's past will affect who they are right now.
Absolutely.
So that's just something we have to keep in mind.
Yep.
And then number two, to respond in ways that foster safety and resilience. So it means when we see something in our colleagues or maybe your subordinates or maybe your boss that you think could be coming from trauma, we have to respond in a way that makes it better, makes
right.
the situation better.
Yes.
You can't, like if you know that person is being triggered, maybe a good idea is walk away for now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't stay in that spot. Like, if you know that whatever you just said triggered.
Right.
Or maybe we can say, I'm so sorry if what I just said upset you. Can you let me understand why you are upset?
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that we can say in these situations that can diffuse the situation.
Yes.
So diffuse means like a bomb is about to go off. Then I have to try to make sure that bomb does not go off.
Yes, yes. And it can be as important as diffusing a bomb, but the author points out that we don't all need to be bomb diffuser experts in order to do this. The next line there says you don't need to know someone's history to be mindful of trauma's effects. So the point of the article here is not that to have a successful business, we all need to be psychotherapists. We all need to have background training in trauma and psychology and such. You just need to be aware. You need to be mindful that it's out there. You need to be mindful of trauma's effects. She goes on to say, you just need to assume that trauma exists. Don't wait for people to tell it to you because they may not. Just assume that it may be there and that it may be shaping how people show up at work. And she goes on to say managers often misinterpret the signs. Silence, which could be an example of trauma, gets labeled as disinterest. If someone doesn't talk, it's wrongly assumed they're just not interested. Anxiety looks like incompetence, inability to do your job correctly. Overfunctioning, a good word there, overfunctioning meaning producing perhaps too much, staying too late at the office night after night. That's often praised because it's very productive in terms of the business, but ultimately the person collapses, just falls apart, gets sick or something, and can't work at all because they have tried to function beyond their capacities. And in reality, summing it up, the author says these are often trauma responses. And we go back to fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. Fawn, meaning to praise someone and to be friendly to them in an insincere way, kind of like flattery, because you want them to like you or give you something, or you don't want them to hurt you. That is fawning. And then in our final paragraph, the business cost of trauma, we are told this Harvard Business Review study, which basically seals the deal here for me in terms of the practical value. What did the Harvard Business Review study say, Rebecca?
It said that employees who feel psychologically safe, so if you feel safe to express yourself, safe to give your opinions, they have a 76% increase in engagement. So if someone is engaged, it just means that they're actively participating. They have a 50% increase in retention. Retention means you don't quit, you stay on. And a 67% increase in referral. To give a referral, this noun just means you suggest your friend or somebody you know to come work for your company.
Yeah.
So here it just shows that psychological safety is really important. If you want to keep your employees, you want them to be active in the company, and you want them to be an advocate for your company.
Right, right. And psychological safety, same as emotional safety, just another way of saying it. Trauma literacy, that last line there, trauma literacy is not extra. It's not a bonus thing. If you have time for it, that's great, but it's not essential. It is. It's essential. And these statistics here from the Harvard Business Review study really make that clear. Well, listeners, we hope this is becoming clear to you, and we encourage you to join us tomorrow for day two of our article. We are done here for today. But for next time, then, I'm Peter.
I'm Rebecca.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.